Welcome to the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. It's May 20, 2014, and this is episode 422. Today I talk with David Kingham, the author of the latest Craft and Vision ebook, Nightscape, which is just hot off the press as I release this podcast. And that's why it's a day late. We had to wait for them to press the buttons over on Craft and Vision. As you'll hear, the reception on David's phone wasn't great. We broke up a few times. I've tried to edit it out as much as possible, but you'll have to just sit through some of that. But basically, you know, David, you'll hear why, but he's living in a Toyota 4Runner out on the American West. So, it's one of those things. Still, hopefully it won't stop you being inspired by David and his journey and his photography. So take a listen, and if you'd like to pick up a copy of Nightscapes, go to mbp.ac/nightscape. David Kingham is a landscape photographer currently living a nomadic life, traveling the American West, specializing in making breathtaking photos of the night sky. Welcome to the podcast this morning, David. Well, this evening for you.
Thanks for having me, Martin.
First of all, congratulations. You know, obviously we're going to be chatting today because you're about to release a new book from Craft and Vision called Nightscape. And you're the author. And so we're going to jump in and talk a little bit about your life and the book. And hopefully the listeners will really enjoy, as I did, not only the book, but your amazing photography. So let's jump in and tell us a little bit about how you got started, first of all, in photography.
Sure. So my mom was a photographer when I was younger. Mm-hmm. She actually had a dark room in the basement. Cool. And I liked to play around with stuff, but I never really got into photography. Mm. So I kind of picked it up. I got a point and shoot when I was about 25 or so. Mm. And I started playing around with that, and it was not a very good camera, but I was having fun with it and trying to get creative with it. Mm. And eventually I ended up picking up a DSLR, and I knew my life was forever changed at that moment. Mm.
And that wasn't so long ago, though, was it?
No, it really wasn't. It was in about 2009, I think, around there.
Yeah, wow.
So I just, once I picked up a camera, I became obsessed with it. I spent all of my free time learning as much as I could about photography, totally different areas and portraiture and lighting and everything. Mm. Nothing to do with night photography at the time, but I was just an obsessive learner. I basically forego everything else in my life. I didn't go out anymore. I didn't watch TV. I just totally focused on photography and learned as much as I could in a short amount of time.
Wow. Yeah, it certainly paid off. So how did that progress into your night photography?
Well, actually, I came across a guy on Flickr. His name on there was Fort Photo. Hmm. And his real name is Michael Maneffi. He was out of Fort Collins, which is where I used to live. Hmm. And he was kind of ahead of his time with photography at that time, and he freely shared all of his techniques and tons of information, and he got really into night photography. And at the time he was using like a D300, which is not the best camera for night photography, but he was doing a really good job at the time. Mm. And so learning a few things from him, I just took that and tried to kind of replicate what he was doing. Mm. And I kind of took off from there. I started going out with another friend, Mike Berenson. And that's when I really became obsessed with it. I upgraded to a full frame camera and then started taking really great images and was just having an amazing time with it and just kind of became obsessed with it.
Wow. So I know that you're kind of stepping back again, I reckon, but you wrote a really wonderful blog post about how you completely changed your life. And for the sake of the listeners, I'll link to this in the show notes. So if you go to mbp.ac/422, you'll be able to find this and the beautiful images that we're going to talk about today as well, probably. This amazing blog post. Can you give us a brief outline of what you spoke about in that blog post?
Sure. So I had previously worked in the architectural field. I was at my previous job for about 7.5 years. Mm. And the company came across hard times and I was laid off. Mm. And so at the time, I had to make a really hard choice of, you know, do I continue in this career, which was actually a really promising career where I was making good money and I could easily find another job making even more. Mm. So I could have chose that easy path, but I decided that it was time. You know, I didn't feel creative in my job anymore, and photography had just completely consumed me. Mm-hmm. So I decided I had to move on, even though I wasn't ready money-wise. I took the risk and took on full-time photography.
Yeah,
and it's the best choice I ever made. I have no regrets about that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, you used exactly the same phrase that I used a few years ago when I dumped my old day job, which was photography totally consumed you. And yeah. I can totally understand, you know, I mean, I've been doing photography many years, but the more I did it, the more I shared my photography and everything, it just totally consumed me as well. And so, I mean, it might have been around the same time, but I gave my old job up in the end of 2010, I think it was. So, you know, I've been doing this full time for the last almost 4 years. But it's a huge leap of faith. And with you not going off and taking the easy path, getting straight back into the work that you'd been doing, it takes a lot of guts. So, you know, hats off to you there for making that, because not a lot of people can do that.
Yeah, it was really scary, but it's by far worth it, and you'll never regret that choice.
Mm-hmm. So, on your book, you start off? I read it a couple of days ago. I'm not a fast reader, but I picked it up, and it was one of those books that, I mean, I've always been interested in the night sky since looking up at it as a kid and first seeing the Milky Way and all of that, and I picked it up and I started reading, and you captivated me in the first paragraph. And so, you know, I read on and I really liked, you know, just to sort of set the stage here, I really liked how you even started the first 22 pages of the book on understanding the night sky. You didn't jump straight into photography. And I thought that was brilliant. You know, how did you... Initially, how did you accumulate all of the knowledge that you pumped into those first 22 pages?
Well, to be honest with you, when I first started out, I didn't know a thing about the night sky. Mm. I would go out, didn't know where the North Star was, didn't know when the Milky Way was out. I was completely lost. Mm. So in the beginning, it was kind of a guessing game, and I had a lot of failures. So I... you know, started to do more research into it as I got more interested. And I started reading different books, reading information online, and just started figuring out things in here and there. And eventually I built up enough knowledge to know when little things were happening. And then over time, I really dug into it and learned a lot more. And I noticed... once I started really learning a lot, I started enjoying it a lot more. Mm. And I think it started showing through in my images.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think when you really connect with your subject, you start creating something really unique.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, yeah. So, you know, with your book, I haven't seen these yet. I was obviously looking at a preview copy, but you provide a series of presets. Can you tell us how they're going to tie into the book?
Yeah, so I created these specifically for night photography and some of the unique challenges that we face. So one of those is setting the proper white balance,
yeah,
which is typically a fairly simple, it can be kind of a creative thing. But in night photography, we have to get really specific to get a really natural looking night sky.
Mm.
So I really spent a lot of time with that. And then I'm also using the RGB curves in a really unique way to remove light pollution, which is kind of that orange cast in our images.
Mm. Yeah, that was pretty cool when I read that. I mean, I was in Namibia last year and got some shots of the Milky Way. And I, when I read that, I'm thinking, oh, okay, I've got to revisit those photos because it's...
Yeah, you definitely should.
Yeah.
It'll help a lot.
Yeah, I'm sure. So you also feature a number of stitch panoramas, you know, like 9, 11 photographs stitched together. What's the most used technique that you use for photographing, making the images that you're going to stitch together?
Yeah, so I've come up with a kind of a really simple way of shooting panoramas that really doesn't require a lot of fancy panorama gear.
Mm.
Basically, all you need is a tripod with a ball head and an L bracket.
Mm.
So what I do is I level the tripod, and which can kind of be a pain. So I like to use a leveling base.
Yeah, me too.
And so that allows me to... you just level the ball head really quick and easy.
Mm.
So then once that is level, your ball head is actually level.
Yeah.
And what I do is actually I compose my shot in portrait orientation. And since we're shooting the night sky, we have to have our camera, you know, pointed up to get quite a bit of sky.
Yeah.
So when you do that, you lose your level.
Mm.
So from that point, what I do is I use one of the newer features is the built-in level or virtual horizon in the camera.
Yeah.
And so I turn that on, and then without changing my composition, I just get the camera level. And this way, you're turning right above you're close to the nodal point of the lens. Since with night photography, we're not shooting subjects that are really close to us, so we don't have a problem with parallax.
Mm.
But, it's a really simple method. I've never had any problems with stitching images, and it works great. It's quick and easy.
That's pretty much exactly the same as what I do. Unless I'm photographing panoramas where there is something really close in the foreground, where I start to get a little bit more technical. But the majority of the time, I don't want to be carrying around my gimbal, my really right stuff gimbal that is also doubled as a panorama head. So yeah, that's pretty much the same as I do. And it really is useful now that we've got those digital levels in the cameras.
Yeah, it's great to have.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so one thing that really surprised me and was that you recommend the use of fog filters to blur the night sky. And although I now understand, you know, having read your explanation why you do that, could you explain that a little bit more for the listeners?
Yeah, so what a fog filter does, it's kind of a opaque material that blurs the image.
Hmm.
And it's not used in landscape photography much anymore because it's easy to reproduce in Photoshop.
Hmm.
But it's a little different with the night sky because if you've ever looked at a night photo, and it just looks like a field of stars.
Hmm.
And it's hard to differentiate the constellations from all the other stars.
Mm.
It's because a camera picks up so much more light because we're dealing with longer amounts of time.
Mm.
So it picks up all these really faint stars and kind of enhances them and makes them kind of look the same compared to the other ones.
Mm.
So what the fog filter does is it actually kind of blurs out and dims the lighter stars.
Yeah.
And it actually enhances the brighter stars by kind of adding this almost halo effect around them.
Mm, mm.
So it's really easy to see your constellations, and it makes a lot more sense to the viewer. It's used to seeing those constellations in the sky.
Yeah, yeah. It makes so much sense, but I'd never thought of it. And I, you know, and of course you can see in your example images, you can see that the main stars that we're used to seeing more easily are much more pronounced. So makes so much sense. I also read your explanation of the 500 rule, and that was really, really useful. And I'm happy to find that the settings that I've used for the few occasions that I have done night sky photography were pretty much on target. But I feel happier now that I've got that proven formula. Can you just explain that for the listeners as well?
Sure. Yeah. Well, you got lucky by getting it right the first time.
Well, I was maybe a few seconds out. I was using the same settings for a number of different focal lengths. But it turns out that my results were pretty much cock on. So maybe I was lucky.
Yeah, because I know I really struggled in the beginning. But the idea behind it is, because the Earth is rotating. Mm. So when you take a picture and you're on the Earth, the stars appear to be moving because they are actually, moving across your sensor. Mm. So you have to limit your exposure times because of this. And this is very dependent on focal length. Mm. So if you just take 500 divided by your focal length, this gives you the number of seconds that you can leave your shutter open. So for example, with the 14 millimeter lens, it's about 36 seconds. So, but I just round that to 30 seconds because it's easier to use on the camera. And then with the 24 millimeter lens, it's 20 seconds.
Yeah.
So I don't do the math in the field though. That's not my strongest suit. So I just figure this stuff out beforehand and I actually just memorize the few different focal lengths that I use.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it makes it really easy. I generally only three lenses that I use. Mm. So I just have to remember those three numbers and it's really simple.
Yeah. It's great to know though. I mean, just a bit of pre-planning and you can go out, you don't have to worry too much about how you're going to set your exposure. I think what I did was I just made a few different exposures and then checked on the back of the camera to see when I could start to see the stars elongating. And once once they started to elongate a little bit, I just pulled back. I think that's probably what I'd done. But but it's great to know that there's actually a method to do that.
Yeah, and it is. It's just a general rule. It's not hard and fast. We actually used to use the 600 rule. But now that we're getting more megapixels, it's a little more obvious that there's trails. So it is all very dependent on it's up to the artist on how long you actually want to go. Depending on how big you're going to print something, or if it's going to be just for the web, it's all up to you.
Does it change as you go further north? You're going to be rotating at different. I imagine if we're on a ball and you're further closer to the top, we're going to be rotating at different speeds. Does it change?
It can change. If you're pointing directly north with a little bit longer lens, you could go with longer focal lengths because the stars around the North Star are not moving nearly as fast as the ones farther out.
But what if physically we're actually further north? Say, if you're on the equator, is it going to be a different rule to say you were at the North Pole?
I'm not sure.
Yeah. No. Okay. So when I heard that you were living out of a Toyota 4Runner and a tent, I realized just how hard you're working for your craft. And how long have you been doing that, living that nomadic life?
Yeah, it is. It's a labor of love for sure. But I've been doing it for almost 4 months now.
Wow.
And it's surprising how quickly you adapt to your situation. Yeah. It's really not that bad living out of a tent. I've really gotten used to it and I'm really enjoying it. I love every moment of it.
Yeah. You have your dog, Emmy is her name?
Yeah, I have my dog with me.
How's she coping? Does she not run off or is she just having a whale of a time?
She loves it. She stays by my side all the time. We go out for hikes and
brilliant.
She can't stand to be inside now. She's just having a ball.
Yeah. But it sounds really, really cool the way you're living. What do you do for power?
Oh, for power, I have a Goal Zero Sherpa 100 that I use for a little bit of backup power. So that charges while I'm driving, and then I can use that to do some editing. I could use a little more power. It's definitely a little bit limiting right now. So kind of learning along the way.
So what is that? Is that a generator or a solar panel?
It's a little power pack. You can power it with solar panels, or you can just plug it with like with the cigarette lighter in your car. I'm doing right now.
Yeah, I see. So I know that we've already covered a number of techniques, and I don't want to give too much away because obviously it's all in the book and it's really worth picking up. But could you give us, say, your three top tips for anyone that wants to get started in photographing nightscapes?
Sure. I think my number one tip would be to learn to use your camera blindfolded. So go either blindfold yourself or go into a dark room in your house and start to learn to change most of your settings without looking at your camera. Because the biggest thing is we're going out and shooting during a new moon. It's completely pitch black. Yeah. And you can't see the hand in front of your face.
Yeah.
And we really want to retain our night vision. So turning on a light all the time is not a good option. So make sure you can change, you know, your shutter speed, your ISO, and your aperture without looking, for sure. And then the other thing would be to learn how to focus manually using live view. And this will make your life a lot easier. But get really comfortable with your lenses, focusing them manually. And then probably the last thing would be to take control of your camera. Take it out of aperture priority or professional mode. And really learn how to set your exposure without using the camera, because at night it's not an option to use those modes. We have to set everything manually.
That's great stuff. So you sent five wonderful images that I am going to embed into the blog post. And I wondered if we could just talk about these briefly. And, you know, I know that we're on a little bit of a flaky connection, so it's probably not going to take, we're probably not going to have to do too much, but could you maybe talk us through each of these? And I'm looking at Cupid Mountain Milky Way. Tell us a little bit about this.
So that image, actually climbed up to this mountain with my friend Mike Berenson, I mentioned earlier. And it was at 13,000 feet in the Rocky Mountains. And in the middle of the night, freezing cold, blowing wind. It was a brutal hike up there. And I believe this image was a single shot. It was probably, I think, 30 seconds at ISO 3200 at 2.8.
So people are probably sitting there thinking, wow, how come you can shoot at 2.8? Tell us a little bit about that, for the sake of the listeners.
And the reason we shoot at 2.8 is because we really need to let as much light in as possible. The night sky is extremely dim. There's not much to work with there. So since we are limited by our shutter speed, we have to use that to let in more light.
So the next one that I'm looking at is the one that I believe you used on the cover of the book, Deep Lake Tent Milky Way.
So this one, I went backpacking in the Wind Rivers in Wyoming, and used a flashlight to light up the tent. I think that was a separate exposure, probably at ISO 400, to create a little cleaner foreground.
I see.
And then the sky, I believe, was, I think it was ISO 3200, because I was using a D700 at the time. And 30 seconds at 2.8, and that was with the fisheye.
Wow. And then you just merge the two together in Photoshop.
Yep, really easy.
Yeah, great stuff. Beautiful image.
Thank you.
So, lead me to Long Peaks. It sounds like I'm actually asking you to lead me to Long Peaks.
Yeah, so this one was taken in the Rocky Mountains again. I came across these coyote footprints in the fresh snow, and I knew I had to take a shot of that.
Yeah.
So I lined it up so they lead you right into the scene. And with this one, I used a 24 millimeter lens, and I actually had to focus stack because the front paw print is probably only about a foot away from the lens.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had to use a few images to focus stack to get everything in focus.
Mm. And did you use the fog filter for this one as well?
This one I did not. No? There's actually a thin layer of clouds.
I see.
Creating the kind of the same effect.
Yeah, got it. Okay, so the next one is Moulton Barn Panorama. This is, again, they all are, but I mean, stunning photograph. Tell us about this.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so this is the Moulton Barn in the Grand Tetons. And I faced a direction away from the Tetons that nobody normally shoots, but I wanted to get the Milky Way arcing right over the top of it.
Mm.
So I took, I think it was about a 20 image panorama.
Wow.
And I think I was with a 24 millimeter lens.
Mm, mm.
And I used my headlamp off to the side and lightly illuminated it while I was taking the panorama.
Mm. You know, that was another thing that really just, it was one of those huge aha moments when you mentioned, when you take, it's just like you were saying, if you stick a camera on the top of the, if you stick a flash on top of the camera, the light's really flat. So when you're doing,
right,
when you're lighting objects like this, you go off to the side. And that makes, again, it's so much sense. And I would have never thought of that. Yeah. Brilliant.
Yeah, that's where it was really helpful to learn other techniques like portraiture.
Mm.
Yeah, because I kind of took those and applied them to this, and it works brilliantly.
Well, yeah.
Create some depth to your images.
I mean, obviously, for portraiture, I would never do it. But I probably, if I was going to be light painting, I would probably have stood behind the camera and just used it. So, again, just creating those shadows and texture with a simple but, you know, not so obvious technique. It's great stuff.
Right.
Yeah. So the last one. Again, this is just one of those wow photographs. Snowy Range Perseids, is it?
I'm not sure. I've always said Perseids, but I'm not positive.
Yeah, okay. So the meteor shower. How do you do this?
Yeah, so this is actually a composite. I set up in the Snowy Range Mountains. They're up in Wyoming.
Mm.
And I shot for the entire night. So just taking 30-second exposures for, I believe it was 7 hours.
Mm.
And just trying to capture meteors in any image I can.
Mm.
And I ended up catching 22 meteors.
Wow.
And so I then took those in Photoshop and merged them all together.
Mm.
But I also fixed it for the what's called the radiant of the meteor shower.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So that's where the meteors appear to come from in the sky. But this actually changes throughout the night.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in this image, in the beginning of the night, it started at the very bottom. And in the end of the night, it was at the top of the photo.
Yeah. Yeah. And you give a great great information on how you do that in the book as well. So people can check that out. You know, I want to ask a question. I did a whole night series of just similar sort of thing, set the camera up in Namibia and did the whole night of the Milky Way sort of rotating in the sky. And on one frame, I had a meteor that made it light as day. Have you ever seen that?
Wow. No, I have never seen that.
Yeah. I don't know. I can maybe show you that. I'll send you a copy of the image. But it's exactly the same exposure as all of the others. I think it was 25 seconds or something like that.
Wow.
And for just one, you can see on the next image or the previous image, just the meteor starting. But then on one, it's as light as day. It's like daylight. And it was really crazy. And I was amazed to see that. So
yeah,
I'm actually.
I would love to see that.
Yeah, I'll send you the image after the podcast. Probably stick it in the show notes as well, just to make sure people can see what I was talking about. But it was was pretty cool.
Yeah, you got something really unique there.
So again, beginner's luck.
Yeah.
Because it was the first time I'd done night sky time lapses. So.
Yeah.
So, David, we've got a kind of a soft limitation on time because of your connection. So I wanted to just ask, where can people find you online?
The easiest place is just on my website. It's davidkinghamphotography.com.
Okay.
And from there, you can find links to all of my social networks. And also, you can follow my adventures on my blog there as well.
Great stuff. Yeah, so I'll link to your main website and probably your social media, and I'll put a link directly to those few blog posts we only mentioned one. You sent a link to another blog post about your year-long road trip. So I've read them both. They're really, really good. So if I will, people are interested, I will put the links to those in the podcast, in the show notes as well. But so that we don't take too much of your time, you're out in your Forerunner at the moment, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm actually, I'm out in the Pacific Northwest right now, and it's raining on me. I've been out shooting waterfalls all day.
Yeah.
Having a great time.
I could hear those big droplets hitting the roof of the car times there. But so really, good luck with the rest of your, I don't know how long do you think you're going to be able to keep this up indefinitely, or?
Well, my original plan was a year, and I honestly don't think that'll be enough time, because even the places that I've already been, I've already passed by so much stuff that I still want to see. So I don't have an end date in mind.
Wow.
I think I'll probably get a camper in the future to make it a little bit more comfortable. But
Well, when I heard that you were living, that you were doing this road trip, I assumed that you were in like some big Winnebago, and you were like, you were pretty much living in a full mobile home. But that's why I was so impressed when I heard that it was a 4Runner. I drive a Toyota SUV, not as big as the 4Runner, and I know what it's like to live out of them. But I do it for like one or two nights, and then I go back and get into my snug bed. And I it's just so impressive that you're doing that month in, month out.
Yeah, so, it was just another risk that I took. I could have waited till I had enough money to get a camper and really do it in a comfortable way.
Yeah.
But the time was right to just do it.
Yeah, I mean, you know when those times come, and if it's just having the guts to take the plunge, and you had the guts. So it's paying off, and I'm really pleased that we had a chance to talk today, and I hope that this is you've definitely been an inspiration for me, so I hope that the same goes for the listeners, and the best of luck with the rest of your road trip and with your book.
Oh, thank you so much, Martin. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Okay, so I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. I really enjoyed reading Nightscape, and it was just full of lots of aha moments, so I'm sure you'll enjoy it. Again, the images that we discussed are going to be at the blog post at mbp.ac/422. And if you would like to pick up a copy of Nightscape, it's over on Craft and Vision. And you can get there with directly to the book at mbp.ac/nightscape. And there's going to be a discount of 20% for the first 7 days. So if you listen to this within 7 days of the release of the podcast, you can get it a little bit cheaper. Before we finish, I'd also like to give you a very quick update on the website situation following last week's episode. We've pretty much figured out most of the problems. I found an alternative to the FancyBox plugin that displays images on screen but larger, and that is now in place. And the only thing that we really need to do now is to stop the audio playing automatically as you hit the blog post pages. And we should be able to do that. It's just that the advice I've received from the developer so far hasn't worked. So I'm hoping to get that done soon, but I know it's probably really annoying. We are working on it, and I will hopefully get that done soon. So thanks very much for listening today. Remember that you can find me on Google+, Twitter, Facebook, etc. And links to everything that I'm up to are there at the top page at martinbaileyphotography.com. So do drop by and take a look. I'll be back next week with another episode. But in the meantime, you take care and have a great week, whatever you do. Bye-bye.